Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Uncle Sam wants you to save big time is the message of a new White House savings proposal to radically reshape U.S. savings plans and incentives, never mind IRAs and 401ks. In the new Bush budget, it's all about LSAs and RSAs, big, fat, tax-free savings accounts, where an American couple could sock away $30,000 a year or more for their retirement, a down payment on a home or a trip to Turks and Caicos. It's a savings revolution on the table, but will it help us all retire, or just a lucky few? Tonight on Point, the Bush savings plan revolution and the future of your hard-earned cash. We begin with the latest from Washington on the new Bush plan. Joining me is Howard Gleckman, senior Washington correspondent for Business Week. Good evening, and thanks for joining us, Howard Gleckman.
Glad to be here, Tom.
Howard, take us through the details of this. This is so new, just kind of fresh off the press. The Treasury Department's just coming out with details. Many of us don't even know what's going on yet. What is being proposed? We know about IRAs and 401ks. Do they go away, or what's coming behind?
Yeah, they're throwing around a lot of letters here. RSA,
yes, we are. It's an alphabet soup.
Yeah, it's amazing. Let me give you a little bit of quick history, just so we understand where we're at, and then we can talk about where they're going. Mm-hmm. For about the last 20 years, Congress has been creating all kinds of new savings plans, some for education, some for health care, some for retirement. And you mentioned the two most common ones, IRAs and 401ks, but there are a bunch of others. There's probably a dozen of them out there. And what the administration is proposing to do is to take that 12 or 13 different proposals and consolidate them into three. The first one, something called an employee retirement savings account, would work very much like the 401ks that most of us are familiar with. You'd get a tax break for contributing the money. Your employer could match if he chose. And then when you get the money, when you take the money out at retirement, you would have to pay
taxes
on
then.
The earnings.
Mm-hmm.
The other two are a little more interesting, and they're probably the ones that are going to get the most attention. One of them is called a lifetime savings account.
The so-called LSA.
LSA, and the other one is called a retirement savings account,
okay.
RSA, which is different from an employee retirement savings account.
All right. Walk us through.
Okay. The way the lifetime savings account and the retirement savings account work is very much like the IRAs that we're all familiar with two big changes. They both work as individual accounts. They have nothing to do with your job, with your employer.
Okay.
They do two things. One of them is they increase dramatically the amount of money you can put in. Instead of the $3,000, which you can put in now in an IRA, you can put in up to $7,500 in a lifetime savings account and another $7,500 in a retirement savings account.
So $15,000 per person or $30,000 for a couple.
That's right. And if you got kids, the kids can put in $7,500 or you can put in $7,500 for them in the lifetime savings account.
They must have very good paper routes, those kids.
That's right.
But that means that a family of four could hypothetically put away, what am I hearing, $60,000 more?
$60,000. Now, the one thing for the retirement
per year.
Savings account is you'd have to make $7,500 in order to put in $7,500.
Mm-hmm.
For the lifetime savings account, doesn't matter. You don't have to make anything. And you or your...
So, in effect, parents could put it away in their children's name?
That's right. Or grandpa could. Anybody could.
Mm-hmm.
The maximum that could be put in every year in any individual person's name would be $7,500. But, yeah, you could, in theory, put $60,000 in if you're that, you know, couple and two-child family.
So this is a huge shift in scale of savings that the government's paying attention to and favoring here.
Absolutely. And then there's one other big change, and that is the way these things work. Currently with an IRA, you get a tax break when you put the money in,
mm-hmm.
and you pay tax when you take it out.
With a traditional IRA, anyway.
That's right. These work much more like a Roth IRA,
mm-hmm.
which only a very few people have right now. And what happens is there's no tax break when you make the contribution,
mm-hmm.
but all the money you earn inside the account is tax-free. And that can add up to a huge amount of money if you can afford to put $7,500 a year into one of these things.
Why is the Bush administration proposing this new plan, Howard Gleckman?
The Bush administration has a couple of things going. One of them is simplification, and most people agree with them that it makes a lot of sense to simplify this mess of different kinds of savings plans. The other one is that they want to encourage savings. And essentially, if you take this proposal and you put it together with the proposal to make dividends tax-free to individual investors, what you've done is you've created a tax system where nearly everybody in America would earn investment income tax-free. Nobody would pay a dime of tax on any of their investment income.
Capital gains, interest, dividends, all tax-free.
All tax-free.
So if you pack it away and make something on it, the goodies are all yours.
That's right. The rough estimates, and people are still trying to figure this out, but the rough estimate is between these two proposals, probably 90 or 95% of us would be able to earn investments over our lifetime and never pay tax.
But what percentage of us can put away anything like $60,000 a year in after-tax dollars?
That's the musical question. Some folks have looked at the contributions that are made to traditional IRAs, and the limits on those until very recently have been $2,000. Mm-hmm. And what they've discovered is maybe 5% of people who contribute to IRAs are able to put away $2,000.
Just two, and now we're talking 15 or 30 or 60.
Well, now we're talking about $7,500 per person, mm-hmm. or 15 if you take the two accounts together.
Mm-hmm.
So the argument is, well, if people can't afford to contribute $2,000, how are they going to afford to contribute $15,000?
What's the White House answer?
The White House answer is the reason people don't make the contributions is that the proposal is that the laws are too complicated and they can't understand them.
Well, they actually have the money sitting around with nothing to do, but they just don't understand how to invest it.
They can't figure out what's good for them.
Do you buy that, Howard Gluckman?
No. I think it's probably true in a few cases.
Of course.
Mostly people don't contribute the money because they don't have the money. The other reason is that people like to have the tax deductions up front. It's one of the reasons why it's very hard to get people to contribute to 401ks.
Mm-hmm.
And they need to be pushed. Americans don't like to save. 401ks tend to be a little more successful than IRAs because at a lot of companies, people force them. You're basically, called into a meeting once a year, and they say you're not going to get out of this room until you agree to sign up for a 401k plan.
So, Howard Gluckman, given what we know about defined benefit pensions, the old-fashioned pensions, and their decline, if this is where we're going, is this going to work for everybody, or is it going to work for a few and not for a lot of others? What's anticipated?
It's going to work for people who have the money available. It's going to work for people who are inclined to save. One of the big criticisms of this proposal is that for people who work for small businesses, this could turn out to be a very bad proposal. And
why?
The reason is that if you own a small business, right now, the only way you can set up a retirement account for yourself is through your company, and you have to make it available to your other employees.
Okay.
With this proposal, you can say, forget my company pension plan. I don't need that. I can put away $15,000 for me and $15,000 for my wife and $15,000 for my kid without setting up any kind of retirement plan for my own employees. So depending on labor markets, if I can get away with it, what I may say is, forget my company pension plan.
Is that going to leave more Americans simply uncovered, unretirable?
It's going to leave more Americans in the position where they're going to have to save for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to have the backing of their company. They're not going to have the encouragement of their company. And,
right.
Of course, this is probably not the subject for tonight, but they're also probably not going to get all the Social Security they were bargaining for.
Right. So do the math and save what you have to save. Is this going to pass, Howard?
I think that some expansion of IRAs and retirement savings plans in general probably will. There's a lot of support for it. There was a bill in Congress last year that got 300-something votes in the House, nearly passed the Senate. It just got hung up at the last minute.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of support to do something. I don't think there's very much support to do this. This is way too big. It's much too controversial. And there's a lot of concern about the issue that I just raised, which is whether or not people who currently have savings accounts will actually lose them.
But something closer to this likely to happen.
I think we're going to see an expansion of contribution limits. People will be able to contribute more money than they do now. I think there'll probably be a loosening up of some of the rules about income limits on who can contribute. So I think there'll be some changes. Those are already in the works, and I think this Bush proposal is just going to push them along even more.
Howard Gluckman, you paint a big vista for us. Thanks very much for bringing the clarity.
Glad to do it.
Howard Gluckman is senior Washington correspondent for Businessweek. He spoke with us from Washington. Americans can help secure their own future by saving, says President George W. Bush, and government, he adds, should do whatever it can to promote that saving. So hold on to your hat. The White House is rolling out a whole new world of programs and tax incentives. If you ever want to retire, it seems, this may well be the way. Are you ready and able to step up to the Bush savings revolution? Is this the way out of the 401k blues? All questions from personal finance to national policy are welcome tonight. You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from Rockville Center, New York, is Ed Slott, certified public accountant and author of Ed Slott's IRA Advisor, a monthly IRA newsletter. His new book is The Retirement Savings Time Bomb and How to Defuse It, a five-step action plan for protecting your IRAs and other retirement plans from near annihilation by the tax man. Good evening and welcome, Ed Slott.
Yeah, and thanks. Glad to be here.
Thank you. It's good to have you. Ed Slott, you advise people all the time on how to handle their savings and their retirement planning. You know very well what's coming down the pike here or may come down the pike. Is this a good thing for your clients?
For my clients and anybody that can afford it, it's the greatest thing that's ever been given to us from Washington.
Why?
I mean, literally, if you have the money, you could pretty much over time transform with these new accounts that Howard described, transform your taxable money to tax-free money for the rest of your life.
I mean, once you
for the rest of your kids' lives.
That means once you save it, it's never going to be taxed again.
Well, that's what they're saying. It almost sounds too good to be true. And for me, I'd take advantage of it myself. Everything that Howard just said before, I'd stuff it in my kids' accounts, mine, my wife, and fund every possible vehicle. You know, these LSAs are really a gift. They're restriction free.
This is the lifetime savings account, the flip side of the retirement savings account, both of which are now on the table.
Yeah, you don't need anything. I mean, take many seniors, for example.
Okay.
They have a lot of savings, maybe in banks, taxable CDs and so forth.
Yeah.
Who wouldn't transfer at least $7,500 a year into tax-free money? If they need it, they just take it out anyway. It's all restriction-free, no ages, no income limits. So I think everybody that had the money would switch at least $7,500 if they had it to these new lifetime savings accounts.
So
that's
reading
a freebie.
That is a big freebie. I'm reading here that a family of four could shield up to $45,000 a year from investment and interest taxation in a lifetime and retirement savings plans, plus $30,000. Anyway, they could come up by 2006, they could save $75,000 a year. A couple contributing $30,000 a year and earning 7% return would shelter $716,000 over 20 years. That's a lot of sheltering going on.
Well, again, if you have the money, yes, you'll almost never pay tax again, and that's where we're heading, I guess.
So, Ed Slott, in terms of household income, if you can do the quick math, at what point, in terms of income and likely capacity for savings, would a household be able to take full advantage of this? I mean, people have mortgages, they have car payments, they have to pay the grocery bill. How much would you have to be making in order to, you know, if you were a fairly frugal person, not a spendthrift, but in order to take full advantage of this new plan?
Well,
I realize there's no absolute answer to that, but a rough guideline.
You'd have to have enough left after taxes to make it work. I mean, obviously, it's after-tax income we're talking about pretty much.
To max out, then, if you were this family of four, you'd have to have $60,000 cash
income
after tax?
Yeah, that doesn't and that's if you don't want to eat or wear clothes or anything.
Yes, I mean after tax, after everything else, if you had $60,000 left over, a husband, wife, and two kids, you would be taking maximum advantage of the new program.
Yeah, I would tell you, I would put everything I could in it, really, because there's no risk not to.
What portion of families that make, I don't know, under $200,000, let's say, make it nice and high, in your experience as a financial advisor, end the year with $60,000 they could after tax, that they could put away?
Whatever they can save. You know, something like this might encourage people who don't save as much to save a lot more. It might even be help people who make less to be more disciplined about savings when they see the benefits over the long term of really reducing their taxes. And that's what you're talking about. If you look at your tax return this year or any year and see how much tax you pay on your interest and dividends, and if that could be removed, you'd start saving taxes right away.
Well, if you could do it, it sure looks great. Ed Slott, stand by. We've got to take a short break. We're going to come back and look at the details here. We're looking at the son of 401k, the daughter of IRAs, the Bush administration's proposed revolution in American savings. Get ready for LSAs and RSAs.
Are you ready for a whole new way to save? Have IRAs and 401ks worked out for you? Is it time for an overhaul? Can you kick back $30,000, $60,000 a year? Join us, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the Bush administration's proposed revolution in American saving. It's kind of a son of 401k, daughter of IRA. It's the new LSA and RSA. We're getting the details tonight, getting the 411 on how all this is going to work out. My guest is Ed Slott. He's a certified public accountant joining us from Rockville Center, New York. He's been prominent in all fields of financial advising and author who's written a lot on the IRAs. You're welcome to join us as well. Our supersized tax-free savings, the way to guarantee your retirement. Could you sock away $30,000 a year with this new plan, $60,000 a year? And can we individually save our way to a decent retirement without pensions? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've been talking with Ed Slott. I want to welcome into our conversation now Mark Every. He's joining us from Washington. He's a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution and a former benefits tax counsel at the U.S. Treasury Department. Good evening and welcome, Mark Every.
Thank you, Tom. Good to be with you.
Thanks for joining us. Mark, we've been hearing the outline of this proposal. It's very ambitious. It's a very big change. And you may have heard Ed Slott saying, as a financial planner, for his clients who can afford it, this is made in heaven. What's your view of the Bush proposal? Is this the way to marvelous retirements for Americans?
Unfortunately, I think this is bad for America. I think this proposal is not going to add to national savings on a net basis. It's not going to provide additional retirement security to the people who need it the most. It's not fair, and it's not fiscally responsible.
Take us through each of those. Ed Slott's describing this as a huge incentive to save. You're saying it would not add to national savings, which, of course, are valuable individually and nationally. Why not?
Well, Tom, most of the saving in the United States today is done through the employer plan system.
401k?
401k and pension plans and profit-sharing plans.
Right.
We have a fairly successful system that's accumulated the largest pool of investment capital ever assembled anywhere in the world, and that covers some 65 million Americans. We need to do better, but the system's worked pretty well. And the key to that system is the effectiveness of the employer workplace plan. The employer plan gets participation from something like 8 out of 10 eligible people. I'm talking about things like the 401k.
But those would not necessarily go away, would they?
Well, they wouldn't go away, but they would be undermined by this proposal.
Why? How?
You heard Ed Slott's understandable enthusiasm,
sure,
about the new unrestricted tax-free checking accounts, the so-called lifetime savings account.
And this is savings where you're saving after-tax dollars, but all the interest, dividends, capital gains is not taxed, and this is the one you could take out and spend on anything.
That's right, and it is a nearly irresistible temptation for people who can afford it, as Ed Slott said, to shift their savings into that account. Now, if people take it out of an account that's now taxable and shift it into that any kind of new account like this tax-free checking account, we don't have additional net saving in America. We have shifting.
So it's a kind of shell game then, in your view. But wouldn't it also be an incentive to save even more?
Well, it's an incentive to save more for those who actually will not shift but put more into retirement or other saving than they did before. But this account, which is the first place you'll put your money, is not a retirement account. It doesn't strike that careful balance that we've struck in our savings and retirement system to date.
Not a retirement account because people won't be able to resist the temptation to take it out and have a holiday.
Absolutely. You know, what we have right now is a good balance within the 401k universe and to some degree within the IRA universe of liquidity and withdrawal standards. You know, you put the money in there knowing that it's for retirement, that you can't easily get at it before retirement. There are disincentives for taking it out. Mm-hmm. But if you really need it, you can get it in a financial hardship from a 401k plan, perhaps in a loan that you're going to pay back. We have limited liquidity, so people know they can get it if they really need it, and therefore they're more likely to put it in.
Respond just on this point, if you would. You're the client's champion here. Mark Avery said, it may feel great, but it's not good national policy.
Well, he makes a good point on the pensions. It is the company plans where most people save. And I could see it. I could see clients that have plans, you know, business clients that say, why the heck do I need a plan? For me, my wife, my kids, I can put money all over the place. Let my employees, they can do it too.
So you think this would encourage companies to downgrade or get rid of their retirement plans?
This way they don't have to bother with the plan. They can tell their employees, look, you have LSAs, you put the money in. And I think Mark may be right. They might not. They might want to go on vacation instead.
Exactly. Ed is absolutely correct. You can imagine people taking their debit cards and using this lifetime savings account for all kinds of casual and incidental expenses in a way that they wouldn't do and can't do in a 401k, much less a pension plan. And I think the reaction that Ed is predicting among his clients is unfortunately all too realistic.
So, Mark, if you let me ask you on that point, what does it matter to the country if this does not increase overall savings but just moves it around?
For one thing, the saving in the United States, and we know that inadequate national saving has been a problem for years, is a composite of private saving among households and public saving in the form of budget surpluses.
And remind us why that's a problem?
If we're increasing our deficits instead of building back surpluses through huge tax benefits of this kind, without using that money in an efficient way to increase private saving. In other words, if we just have a shell game among households and a expenditure on the part of the government, which is what we do have here, especially in the long term, the net result is public dissaving and no increase in private saving.
And you said at the outset that this would not guarantee retirement for those who need it most. I guess you mean people who can't put away $7,500 or $15,000 or $75,000 a year.
Tom, the average contribution in this country for people who do contribute to plans, and that's already a minority of the whole population, the average contribution is somewhere in the neighborhood of $3,000.
To IRAs or?
To 401ks, where contributions are, even where contributions are matched by the employer in 70% of these plans, and where saving is much easier than it is in an IRA. In IRAs, one out of 10 people who are eligible to contribute actually does contribute.
So that's distressingly low. Maybe this reform would pump those numbers up.
What it's likely to pump up is contributions to these new tax-free checking accounts, which are not IRAs, these lifetime savings accounts, which, unlike IRAs, do not have withdrawal standards that tend to keep the money in there. And if the small business owner, a lot of Ed's clients, react the way Ed predicts, then they're going to drop or cut back the plans they have for their employees, because this way they can get theirs. They can save on a tax-favored basis huge amounts, enough to satisfy the saving appetite of most small business owners without giving a penny to their employees.
Mark Avery, Ed Slott, stand by. A lot of callers want to join this conversation. There's a lot more to talk about, but I want to invite them in. George is calling from Madison, Wisconsin. Hi, George. You're on the air.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
I believe the entire plan fits into a, forgive the expression, a giant conspiracy to Reaganize the economy. If you remember under Paul Volcker, the inflation wiped out the debt. It lowered the dollar and created jobs because we had a lower dollar. And I think this is just a way of taking and eventually preparing us for a resolution of the national debt.
How would this bring us to a resolution of debt, George?
If you get the
You got a busy household there, George.
if you get the middle class to invest their money as hard dollars mm-hmm. into some form of investment plan, they may benefit if they're in the stock market from inflation. But ultimately, the middle class is the loser. So those persons who have invested will ultimately fund the deficit spending that we're just about to go through.
George, got it. Thank you for your call. Mark Avery, do you hear that in this? As you describe it, and Ed Slott as well, if it's going to primarily benefit those who can save big time, but it contributes to debt that everybody has to pay off, is that the shifting of burden you're talking about, George raises as well?
Yeah, I disagree with George about the conspiracy theory. I think this is a well-intentioned proposal from people who seriously believe that it would be desirable to remove all taxes on capital in the United States, on returns to capital, investment returns, interest, dividends, capital gains, without necessarily removing taxes on labor, on wages,
mm-hmm.
And maybe moving ultimately to replace taxes on wages with a consumption tax. The key is whether it's progressive.
Mm-hmm.
Does this reflect the people's ability to pay and the people's need to save? And I think, unfortunately, this leaves most of the American population behind and really burdens our future generations with costs that are largely concealed. I mean, the costs here, Tom, are not what they appear to be, because if you replace tax-deductible IRAs
mm-hmm.
with these back-loaded, these accounts that give their tax benefit at the end when you take the money out.
Because it's after-tax money, my tax break comes when I cash out.
Your tax break comes when you cash out, and for the government, therefore, the cost comes when you cash out.
Perhaps many years later.
Not up front, many years later, not today when you make the contribution and,
mm-hmm.
and under a deductible IRA when you would get the deduction. So the government's costs are being postponed outside of the so-called budget window. You know, in Washington, people
yep.
try to estimate the costs of government programs
mm-hmm.
by looking at the next 5 years or 10 years. These costs are going to hit after the next 10 years, principally just when the baby boomers are retiring.
But in your view, they do dig a hole out there somewhere. Paul's calling. Welcome, Paul. You're on the air.
Hi. Good evening. The main point I wanted to make was simply that the bottom line is that this country does not save enough.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hardly an apologist for the Bush administration, but it strikes me that any effort that aims to increase the net amount of savings is what is fundamentally needed.
And this looks like a huge incentive for savings.
Well, it's a huge incentive as long as there's an assumption of personal responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose where I disagree a little bit with what some of your guests have said is that, yes, it's true, people aren't saving enough right now, but somehow this population needs to understand that less credit card debt now and more stocking away for the future
mm-hmm.
is what is going to make them have an affordable retirement.
So maybe this great big lure would actually change the culture. Let me put that to Ed Slott. Paul, thanks for your call. Ed, you've advised an awful lot of Americans. Is it possible that over time, the sort of the bag full of goodies that this represents could actually get Americans in large numbers, to your mind, to change their savings habits? Maybe it would transform the culture.
Maybe, but that lure you talk about works both ways. As we said before, these LSAs will be positively irresistible. Now, the lure could work both ways, because now you put money in, you decide, I'm going to be disciplined, I'm going to put the money away,
mm-hmm.
and then you want to buy a big screen TV,
mm-hmm.
so you take the money out. I don't know if we have the discipline as Americans to keep our hands off the money,
mm.
whereas, as Mark said, in the pension plans provided by employers, it's more structured, they get more people to go into the plans, and it's not that easy to get money out, and that money kind of sticks with you for your life.
Mm.
I don't know if that'll be the case with the LSAs. We all hope it is,
mm-hmm.
and it's a tremendous incentive to save, but will we save? Will the money stay there, or will it be a checkbook?
Ed Slott, Mark Avery, stand by. I want to welcome into our conversation Pamela Olson. She's Assistant Secretary for Tax Policy at the U.S. Treasury Department. She joins us from Washington. Good evening and welcome, Pam Olson.
Thank you for having me on.
Thanks so much for being with us. Pam, we're looking at the LSAs, the RSAs, the kind of savings revolution that you and the Bush administration are proposing here tonight. Ed Slott, who's the financial advisor, is celebrating for his clients who can afford it. but worried that they may not save. Mark Avery at Brookings Institution is saying this is going to end up being a bust for the country because we're digging a deficit hole down the road and at least behind those who need help the most. What is the big thinking behind this big proposal?
Well, first I would say that the deficit hole that we're digging is the fact that people aren't saving enough. That's the real problem we have in this country. And what we're hoping will happen with these proposals is that we will really encourage people to save dramatically more than they're saving now and really turn around the culture that we have grown in the last couple of decades with people just spending and spending and not thinking about their future, not taking responsibility for it. Right now we have a few incentives to save. The incentives that we do have to save are ones that largely the upper middle class and upper class folks can take advantage of, and we don't have things that folks in the lower and more moderate income brackets can take advantage of because they can't afford the illiquidity of the current accounts. So what we want to do is give them a vehicle where they can feel comfortable about saving for their needs, knowing that if they need it for something, they'll be able to get to it.
But the point that's been made here tonight, Pamela Olson, is that, when you look at lower and moderate income families, they simply won't have the extra cash to take full advantage of these programs, and B, that illiquidity is a two-edged sword, that it may not end up being saved for their retirement when they may need it most.
There's right now what we have is sums that are, you can set money aside for a bunch of different purposes. You can set it aside for retirement. You can set it aside for education. You can set it aside for medical. But once you do, you've tied it up for those purposes.
But how many moderate income families, let's say a husband and wife, and they've got an income of, $50,000, $65,000, you name it, what percentage can put aside $15,000 after tax cash a year?
Not very many of them, but some of them will be able to, and some of them will be able to in some years. But if we cap it at a lower amount, then that paltry sum isn't going to be enough to cover them to save as much as they need to be saving in order to retire happily, to take care of their medical expenses, to take care of their kids' education. So what you want to do is set a really generous sum to encourage as many people as possible to use it and to use it to the max in those years that they can do so.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's the argument. Mark Avery?
Yeah. First of all, let me say the administration is truly fortunate to have someone of Pam Olson's experience and talent representing it and advocating for the White House's proposals. I've worked with Pam, and she is an outstanding tax lawyer and public servant. But even Pam can't turn this sow's ear into a silk purse. The lower income people have plenty of opportunities now to save far more than they're capable of saving. The fact is a 401k allows people to put in $12,000 a year. If your income is moderate to low, you can also save in an IRA at the same time an additional $3,000 a year.
Mark Avery, I've got to interrupt right there. Please hold the thought. We'll come right back after a break. What do you think? We're talking about a whole new way of savings. Does it sound good to you? Does it sound fair? Do you have the option to put away thousands more each year? 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the Bush administration's proposed revolution in American savings, new plans, LSAs, RSAs that would blow the lid off limits imposed by old-fashioned 401ks and IRAs. What do you think? Are you prepared to sock away $30,000 a year after tax with this new plan? $60,000 a year are supersized tax-free savings the way to guarantee your retirement. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're joined tonight by Ed Slott, a CPA from Rockville Center, New York, and a big voice in the world of financial planning, by Mark Avery, a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, and now from Washington by Pamela Olson, Assistant Secretary for Tax Policy at the U.S. Treasury Department. Mark Avery, if you could just finish up your point. I want to get Pam Olson's response here. You were saying you don't think this is going to cover the waterfront of Americans.
Well, I don't think this is well targeted to most American workers. You know, the median income in this country is about $40,000 per family. The average contribution, even in a 401k, the most powerful savings plan we've got, is about 6% of pay. 6 times 40,000, about 2,400, somewhere between 2 and 3,000, probably closer to 3,000, is what people contribute on average when they do contribute. Now, 8 out of 10 people eligible for a 401k participate in a plan, but that's about all that the average person is able to contribute. Then they get an employer match, which is a tremendous additional advantage, which these lifetime savings accounts would not provide. If the boss switches to a lifetime savings account, as Ed Slott described, and drops the plan, the employers lose the employer match, the payroll deduction opportunity to save more easily, and the withdrawal standards that help them keep the money in the plan while still having access to it.
Pamela Olson, you can hear in that how easily this is likely to be described by Democrats and Bush opponents as another giveaway to the rich. Well, how do you counter that?
Well, I think the sow's ear label's on the wrong thing. You can say all the wonderful things you want about the current system, but the fact of the matter is that very few people are covered by it. 75% of the employees of small businesses have no pension coverage at all, and we are leaving them out in the cold. And it's like saying the fact that people don't participate is like saying that because people didn't buy Edsels, they don't like cars. That's not the problem. The problem is the design of the current system, and that's what we're trying to fix with our proposal.
So are you really banking on a fundamental cultural change that leads Americans to suddenly become big savers with the lure of these plans?
We are certainly hoping that we're going to change the mindset of people around this country. You know, right now, if you save, you're a chump because over time, your taxes go up and your access to various benefits provided by the system go down. You save for your kids' education, you don't get financial aid. You save for medical expenses, you don't get medical coverage. We have all of these things built into the system.
Perverse incentives.
Exactly, that tell people they shouldn't save. At least if we fix the problem in the tax system of it shifting the tax burden to the people who are thrifty and virtuous, we'll at least be taking away some of that disincentive.
Pam Olson, Mark Ivery, Ed Slott, stand by. I want to welcome David into our conversation, calling from Worcester, Massachusetts. Hi, David. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to mention, I work with a human resource consulting firm.
Okay.
And I've spent about 14 years trying to help employees of rather large companies, but even some small ones as well, increased our participation in 401k plans, 403b plans, et cetera, those that have an employer match. And we've had a lot of trouble getting people to participate more, frankly, because they say they can't afford it. I mean, we do surveys and focus groups to try and find out, you know, we tell them, look, if you contribute up to 6%, your employer is going to match this. This is free money. Sometimes they match dollar for dollar, sometimes 66%.
And people still don't do it.
And they would love to participate more, but they can't afford it.
Do you think, David, with this new plan, though, if there was no limit, they could put in all they like, they could spend it on anything, would it change their lifestyle, change their habits so that they would suddenly be able to say, hey, I'm going to step up and invest in my LSA?
I don't think so. I mean, right now they're giving up free money because they can't afford to. I think to suggest that the average Joe can afford to contribute $15,000, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 is somewhat ludicrous. The other point I would make is that the current tax law has these restrictions on taking the money out because it really is protecting the employee from himself. I mean, there's a lot of cases where employees have gotten their hands on their 401k money and blown it very quickly.
And it's all gone. David, stand by. I want Pam Olson to answer. Pam, if you could, here's the human resources voice saying, boy, I'm not sure the people I advise are going to do this. They already don't take advantage of free money in the 401k program.
Again, what we need to do is change the incentives. We need to change the national mood. We need to go back to telling people that saving is virtuous and that it's important for them to do that for their future health and well-being. So that's, you know, that's the sort of cultural shift that we need to make. And one of the things that will help with that is if we can assure people that they will have liquidity, that if they need the money, they're going to be able to get it. You know, they're planning on saving to send their kid to school, and then it turns out they have some emergency involving the kid before they get to that stage, and they need the money. They'd be able to use the lifetime savings account to take the money out to do that.
David, liquidity and virtue, will that change the people's habits that you work with?
I can't answer the question entirely. I think that the other gentleman said that there's only so, or maybe it was Pamela who said there's only so many Americans that are covered by these employer plans. And I agree that having another alternative besides just IRAs and Roth IRAs is a really good idea. I think the idea is great. I don't think that large employers are going to buy into doing away with the current system, though. Maybe it's an add-on that can reach down to these other people who can't take advantage of 401k plans or don't have access to them.
David, thank you for your call, and watch this space. And Pamela Olson, I know we have to let you go, but thank you so much for coming on tonight as well.
I just want to say before
that,
you know, we have also proposed radical simplification on the employer plan side. We certainly don't want anybody to drop their plans. We're trying also to encourage more small businesses to offer plans by simplifying the rules, by making them less costly to administer and so forth. So we hope to hit on both sides here.
We've got it. Pamela Olson, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me on.
Pamela Olson is Assistant Secretary for Tax Policy at the U.S. Treasury Department. Daoud is calling from Boston. Hi, Daoud. You're on the air.
Hello.
Good evening.
Thank you very much for receiving my call.
Good to have you.
I think that this is an excellent idea. And the economic instrument that's being used, mm-hmm. I think will do just what Pam indicated. It will revolutionize the culture, the economic culture of the people in America. I think it's going to enable us to have more freedoms. I think it's going to give us the power of choices. It will empower a lot of people and give them the incentive to save more,
and
which will have a powerful impact.
Would you be ready to do it, Daoud? Would you be ready to stand up and sock away that $15,000 a year after-tax cash?
If I had it available, definitely. And if I didn't have that much, I would put away as much as I can.
Daoud, you sound like the ideal candidate for the cultural transformation. Thank you for your call. Ed Slott, I'm sorry, we've got you off there, and I haven't heard from you in a while. Give us a picture for the affluent family who could take full advantage of this. If you're sitting down with them as their financial advisor, what are you going to tell them?
Well, some people out there, before I say this, might get sickened by this, but you know, a wealthy family, let's say you have a family with a few kids, mm-hmm. with a few grandkids, remember, you don't have to put in for yourself. You can put in for 10 grandkids, for 50 grandkids, for close friends and relatives, your own kids, your mother,
your father.
So
it's pop the champagne cork time. What are you advising them? How is this going to change their outlook, their future?
Well, because they'll be shifting all of their money from taxable money to tax-free money over time. I mean, really, between the $15,000 in LSAs for a couple and the $15,000 in RSAs, and they could convert their existing IRAs. Remember, that's unlimited. I mean, if you have the money, let's say you have $5 million in an IRA and mm-hmm. you're willing to convert it and pay, say, $2 million in tax, well, now that and you have the $2 million in other money, so now you have $5 million growing tax-free for the rest of your lives. And then you're going to die and leave this over, and the kids are going to get it tax-free, and the grandkids. So,
praise the Lord and pass the $5
million. Right.
So, I mean, you asked if you had the money, how far could you go with it? It's unlimited, really.
And, Mark, even we've just got 20 seconds, but the impact of this, well, first of all, do you think it's going to go through? And if it does, the impact?
No, but I think Ed makes a good point. And for the top 2% or 3% of the population, it'll work just that way. For the other 98% of us, I think this is a losing proposition.
Is it going to happen or be voted down?
I certainly hope that it doesn't happen. And I think ultimately people will recognize this is not a well-thought-out, bipartisan, collaborative effort. And what we need instead is careful reform.
Mark Ivery, with that, we're out of time, and I'm sorry for it, but I want to thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Mark Ivery is Senior Fellow at the Brookings Institution. And Ed Slott, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
Ed Slott is author of the new book, The Retirement Savings Time Bomb and How to Defuse It, a 5-step action plan for protecting your IRAs and other retirement plans from near annihilation by the tax man. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. First Lady Laura Bush recently postponed a White House poetry symposium after learning that some invited poets might use the occasion to protest possible war with Iraq. The controversy began when Washington State poet Sam Hamill received an invitation to the event and, in response, sent an email to 50 of his friends and colleagues asking them to send him anti-war poems. The request spread over the Internet. The White House caught wind and put off the event, saying it did not want to mix poetry and politics. To date, Hamill has received about 4,000 anti-war entries. On February 12th, he plans to send the anthology of poems to the White House and hold public readings with notable poets across the country. In this radio diary, Sam Hamill remembers the moment when he was inspired to begin the Poets Against the War project.
Poetry is a social voice that arises in a private moment. And I was thinking of course, of the great poem of Walt Whitman, who was one of the subjects of the White House symposium, who said years ago to the states or any of them or any city of the states, resist much, obey little. Once unquestioning obedience, once fully enslaved. Once fully enslaved, no nation, state, city of this earth ever afterward resumes its liberty. To have a symposium on Walt Whitman, while this president is reducing our civil liberties and doing what he's doing, just made me, frankly, a little bit sick. At present, we have about 4,000 entries. This is the largest assembly of poets ever to speak in a single voice in all of recorded history. And they're still coming in. This is a poet, Rebecca Seiferly, not a war song. Why should I, searching the thesaurus for synonyms for chant and cadence, try to make various and alive the unremitting noise of war, army cadence, battle chant? And if the behavior is unique to our species, each bird or whale or wolf in solitary call, though I'm not sure that I believe this when all the wolves my neighbor owns start howling to a police siren, the words of war are as dull as the armor of the ruthless Diomedes, who stalked the goddess of love to drive her from what had been the fields and green pastures of Troy, now decimated to an excremental slab of mud and limbs. He pierced her veil of stars and fog to slash her hand where bone meets palm. So war is dependent for its reason and its myth upon anecdotes of wounding someone's lovely form, and the poet must be a solitary singer, not necessarily nightingale, perhaps common wren or western meadowlark, its voice tightening across the distance, singing a bleak and awkward beauty against the commonality of war. Poetry is a social voice. Poetry isn't a silent thing. It makes noise, and it's about human relationships between humans and non-humans. And there's always an element of politics in that. But historically, going back to Homer or the ancient Chinese poets, it's also a very social, political voice. Always has been. I think that poetry makes subtle changes. I don't expect us to make a profound difference. But historically, it's a matter of what we used to call consciousness raising. It's about developing sensibility. Someone needs to speak in this country for the innocent people who will die. And that's one of the obligations, I think, of the poet.
Sam Hamill is the author of 40 books of poetry. He lives in Port Townsend, Washington. For more information about Poets Against the War, you can visit our website at onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.